Snow is by far one of the hardest things in meteorology to forecast accurately. So why is that? How come the professor won't forecast more than 3 days in advance of a snowstorm? And how come my friend will get one amount of snow and I get something completely different, and we live in the same town? All this and more coming up. So the biggest problems when it comes to snow forecasting are: 1, will it snow at all? 2, how much will it snow? And 3, where will it snow? So I'm going to pick these apart slowly, piece by frozen piece. Let's start with, will it snow at all? When it comes to making snow, the first condition needed is cold. Pretty obvious, this one. However, what many people don't know is I'm talking about the temperature from the bottom layer of the cloud all the way down to the surface. Now remember, it can snow above 32 degrees Fahrenheit. However, you need the ground or surface temperatures to be below freezing for your fun, fluffy, white stuff to stick around. The ground itself also needs to be cold. This is a common weather model mistake during transition seasons, like say late fall or early spring. The model says, oh, well, it's 32 degrees and there's precipitation, so it's gonna snow. What the model forgot, in air quotes, is that it's been 60 or 70 degrees for 5 days before the snow event is expected to occur. So if that's our setup in like the dead of winter, yeah, it would probably still yield a few good inches. But in late fall, early spring, when the ground isn't cold enough yet, nope. The first few or possibly all of your snow might fall but melt upon contact with the ground, leading to a busted forecast and upset snow lovers. Now, everything we've been talking about thus far has been at the surface. That's the ground level where we live. The problem is the atmosphere is three-dimensional, and whereas you or I don't travel through multiple layers of sometimes differing temperatures before reaching the surface, our precious frozen white fluff does. Let's stay here for a minute and hash this out. I'll start with the two easiest precipitation types, snow versus rain, just to refresh your memory. When it rains, the temperature inside the clouds might be below freezing. Yes, it happens more often than you might think. And it snows out of the cloud, but as it passes through warmer layers downwards towards the surface, it melts and lands as liquid water, aka rain. When it snows, the temperature inside and outside the cloud is below or nearly at freezing, so the snow will fall as a frozen ice crystal all the way to the surface. The closer to the freeze melt temperature it gets, the bigger our crystals will be. Sometimes they'll even clump up together and have a little party. These are called snow crystal aggregates. The two types of winter precipitation in between these two ends are much more complex. The first being freezing rain. It may also begin to snow higher up near the cloud base. Then it passes through several layers or one very deep layer of warmer than freezing temperatures. Then snow melts, but at the surface, there's a very shallow chilled layer that's below freezing. So when this now water contacts a surface like ground, tree, or windshield, it instantly freezes. Finally, the last type of winter precipitation is sleet or ice pellets. It again starts as snow, passes through a now shallow layer of warm, but then refreezes before reaching the surface. So it's essentially a frozen rain droplet. Ta-da! Next up, we have moisture. You may not know this, but the warmer the air is, the more moisture it can hold. It's true. Think of it like the air is a bucket that can hold water. And if the temperature of the air is 30 degrees, the bucket is the size of a shot of espresso. As the temperature increases to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, now that bucket is a venti latte sized bucket. Starbucks is not a sponsor of this podcast. Hopefully you get the idea. So you may have noticed that the closer to 32 degrees Fahrenheit, the larger and larger your snowflakes are. A small sidebar here about lake effect snow. Lakes can provide ample amounts of moisture when coupled with the right wind and cold temperatures, localized amounts of lake effect snow can be extreme, like say 6 to 10 feet extreme. However, these types of forecasts are even more sensitive to small changes in wind speed, especially wind direction. It can be the difference between a few inches and snow mountains. Speaking of snowflakes, did you know that there are actually several different kinds of ice/snow crystal patterns? The type of crystal is directly linked to the cloud temperature it is birthed from. For example, a cloud temperature between 25 and 32 degrees Fahrenheit will create thin plate crystals. A bit cooler for that cloud, and you might see needles, which are long, thin crystals. I saw a lot of these at Penn State. A cloud temperature of 14 to 21 degrees Fahrenheit, you might see hollow columns, kind of like pencils, I guess. Slightly cooler than that, and there are differing plate type crystals, like solid plates, sector plates, broad branch plates. These are actual names, I'm not making these up. Pictures of all of these are online, by the way. And there was even a USPS stamp collection of crystal patterns back in 2006, the year the professor graduated from undergrad, by sheer coincidence, of course. Okay, back to the crystals. Now, the most commonly recognized type of crystal pattern is the dendrite. This is probably the one you drew on a notebook in grade school with branching forks, or maybe that was just me. Anyway, so if the cloud gets colder than that, it will make plates again, and then finally the coldest cloud will make more columns. My cloud dynamics professor, yes, we had a class for that, taught me to catch the falling snow crystals on my polyester coat sleeve to examine the crystal shape. You can try this too. It works best with well-insulated coats. Heat from your body should be trapped mostly by the coat, so the crystal will linger for a few seconds on the exterior surface of your coat, and you can examine its shape. Not recommended while moving. Okay, something else you might have noticed is the composition of snow can change. There's wet snow, meaning a high moisture content that's probably closest to 32 degrees Fahrenheit snow. This is the stuff that's disgusting to clean up, in my humble opinion. It also almost instantly turns to slush, and I'm not talking about the good kind you find in slushies. Then it refreezes overnight if it gets cold enough, and you just have a big mess. Then there's dry snow. This is the kind that's dry and powdery, easily removable with a good gust of wind. Wet snow is what you would desire for making snow people. However, since dry snow doesn't stick very well to itself, it's not good for that because it has a low moisture content. And the Maryland, DC area gets a good deal of its snowstorms originating from the Gulf of Mexico, leading to higher moisture amounts, meaning we get mostly wet snow. More details on this to come. Okay, the second part that gets it wrong. How much will it snow? The precipitation amount, the amount of precipitation coming, is also quite critical for your snowfall forecast. Even forecasting amounts of rain can be quite difficult for weather models. However, a difference of a half an inch of rain probably doesn't leave you fuming and waving your fist at the local weatherman. However, what if I told you that a half an inch is the difference in snowfall between getting 3 inches and nearly 8 inches? Well, how does that work, you say? I'll explain. All right, fair warning, we're going into a little bit of math here. Maybe you've heard of the snow to liquid water equivalent ratio, or snow ratio for short. An example, 10 to 1. This means for every 1 inch of liquid water, it could convert to 10 inches of snow. Does that sound like a lot? Well, actually, that's the average snow ratio. Generally, you would receive this snow ratio around 32 degrees Fahrenheit as your air temperature. This is not a hard and fast rule, more of a guideline. Each snowstorm is unique. Tell me about it. Let's say the air temperature is more like 34 degrees Fahrenheit. This would yield about 7 inches of snow for every 1 inch of rain, or even as low as 5 inches to an inch of rain. As the air temperature drops, the fluffiness increases. As one weather person from the professor's childhood used to say, the fluff factor increases. So at 28 degrees Fahrenheit, the snow ratio is 15 to 1 inch of rain, and it can get as high as 21, 22, even 25 inches to 1 inch of rain. So let's do some quick math examples. I'll do two storms. First, a low storm yield. It has a liquid equivalent of 0.35 inches over DC. If the air temperature stays around 34 degrees Fahrenheit, that would turn into 2.5 inches of snow. Whatever, that's not a big deal. If it's 32 degrees Fahrenheit, that's now 3.5 inches. And if it's cold and 28 degrees Fahrenheit, that's around 5.25 inches of the fluffy white stuff. Now let's do a high yielding storm. That didn't sound impressive, right? So let's say this high yielding storm has a liquid equivalent bullseye over DC of 3.5 inches of rain. If the air temperature stays around 34 degrees Fahrenheit, that storm total could be as much as 25 very wet inches of snow. If it's 32 degrees Fahrenheit, that storm could total around 35 inches of snow. Now we're talking, right? And if it was dry, fluffy snow from a temperature of 28 degrees Fahrenheit, that would be 53 inches of snow. I'm rounding, but wow, right? So see what a big difference your temperature makes in our snow totals. So even a small error in the temperature can propagate into a large problem when it comes to making your snow forecast. Another problem is snowfall variability, meaning snow is its own beast. If it wants to dump 3 feet here and the next neighborhood gets an inch, that's how it rolls. Get it? Rolls? Okay, but seriously, snow doesn't fall exactly the same in every location. Perfect example, the professor experienced this growing up in Caroline County, Maryland. The northern portion of the county would receive 3 to 6 inches of snow, and the southern portion might only get freezing rain, or worse, nothing at all. But school would be canceled for everyone in the county. Same county, different totals. And this can be as large as a state in differences or as tiny as a town or city. One community gets a lot, another nearby gets nothing. So forecasting where it will snow becomes quite difficult. Another small sidebar here, elevation can have a big impact on your snowfall totals. Why? Because temperature decreases with height. The higher in elevation you are, the more likely all of your precipitation will be in the form of snow. Key example for this, the January 2016 blizzard yielded over 40 inches in Glengarry, West Virginia. Its elevation, 587 feet above sea level. For comparison, Washington DC Reagan National Airport is 15 feet above sea level. Now that rule also applies backwards as well. The lower in elevation, the more chance of mixing in some rain or wintry mix, because generally lower elevations will mean warmer temperatures. Okay, and the third trickiest factor going into our snow forecast is where will it snow? So when it comes to snowstorms, or any storm really, there's usually a swath, as we like to call it in meteorology circles, of heaviest precipitation. This can be extremely narrow. According to the National Snow and Ice Data Center, during intense snows, sometimes the heaviest snowfall will happen in very narrow bands and at such a small scale that current forecast tools can't detect it. The Weather Channel adds that these bands can be as narrow as 5 to 10 miles wide and produce over 1 inch an hour, while an area just a few miles away gets much less or even no snow at all. Local variations like wind, melting, variations in snow depth, pre-treating your road, sidewalks, composition of your yard, is the ground frozen or not, will all affect what you see outside your window after the snowstorm passes. All right, next up we have the magical low center snow blob. It's not the best way to describe it, but it gets the job done. To the north and west of the center of the low pressure, see other podcast episodes about how they form, is generally the epic bullseye for the highest snowfall totals. Well, why is that? Well, Much of the cold air in the storm is located there, being wrapped inward by counterclockwise winds, and as we saw previously, the colder it is, the easier it is for our fluffy snow to make an appearance. Snow lovers, your favorite position to be in would be the northwest quadrant of the low pressure center. And also we have the magical rain snow line. Talked about much on the news, the rain snow line is the transition line between rain and snow, precipitation types usually defined by surface or near surface temperatures. In the DC area, it seems to be oddly connected to the I-95 corridor. Is it man-made, you ask? Possibly. Stay tuned for my brief discussion in the conclusion. Or could it be just a coincidence based on the fact that most north storms are nor'easters coming up from the south, and Maryland geography has the Chesapeake Bay running through the middle of it? More on this in the previous podcast episode, Winter Weather Safety. Anyhow, generally speaking, if you are to the north or west of the rain-snow line, you will experience snow. And if you are to the south and east of the rain-snow line, you will experience rain or some wintry mix. Along this magical line is the ever-present wintry mix freezing rain slash sleet. Again, these are generalizations for the Maryland DC area. And finally, we have the magical timing factor. Timing of snowstorms is also important. For example, temperature changes occur much more drastically overnight compared to during the day. Plummeting temperatures and increasing winds can change a snowstorm into a blizzard quite easily. And recall from above, the colder it is, the more snow and the fluffier that snow is. Think Snowmageddon, February 2010. Most of the accumulation occurred, that's right, during overnight hours. Whereas, if a snow is to occur during daylight hours, it might not be able to reach those optimal conditions for a great snowfall. Don't forget the ground also has a chance to cool at night as well. Finally, how fast the storm is projected to move is important. A slower moving storm will yield higher amounts of snow than a fast moving one. Or what can happen is the storm looks to be slow moving at first, but then kind of changes its mind and evacuates much more quickly than anticipated. Bye bye, storm totals. Okay, in conclusion, some things to remember when verifying a forecast. It can be in one of four categories. We predicted yes and it was yes, that's called a hit. We predicted yes and it was no, that's called a false alarm. We predicted no and it was a yes, that's called a miss. And we predict no and it is no, and that's a correct rejection. Fortunately, our hits are fairly good and correct rejections are also fairly good. The part where the public gets upset is the false alarm. You said it was snow, 2 feet of snow, and we got 4 inches, what's wrong with you? And or the miss, you said we get 4 inches, and I have 3 feet of snow on my lawn, how could you blow it this badly? Let me remind you, as I did above, the fact that we can A, forecast snow at all, with any degree of accuracy, I think is nothing short of a miracle, and you should consider it such. According to OpenLearn, some computer models are so complex that they take days or even weeks to model a single cloud. A cloud, people. They continue, that's not much use to forecasters who have to make a prediction now about tomorrow's weather for a whole city, state, or country. Also, too, try to not forget that the atmosphere is very chaotic and crazy and has a lot of things happening all at the same time. And we, as scientists, are trying to pin down how many inches of ice crystals will be piled up on your lawn compared to your neighbor's 2 weeks away with superb accuracy. Did you laugh? Because you should have. Also, no snowfall forecast is truly, quote, set in stone. The model is constantly updating itself with more data and initial conditions. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. This is why the professor doesn't like putting out one or two numbers to represent a snowstorm. I personally feel we should move to a more vague forecast, such as low, medium, high impact, or totals. Of course, this would be dependent on the community being forecast for, because high impact in Georgia means something different in Montana. Also, forecasting more than 3 days out is risky business because precipitation forecast accuracy tends to decrease with an increase in forecast time. A sad truth, our technology limits us. A 10-day forecast or even 7-day forecast for an epic snowstorm, the professor will generally laugh off. Seriously, my family knows 3 days or less is when the forecast is at its best. I coined it first, okay, but I also found it in a published article by Live Science. But point being, it's well known that the limits of current forecast models are there. Finally, could all of this be our own fault? Snow forecast being in the news and being high public items are drawing more attention to it, which could be making people more sensitive. And or urban sprawl and expanding urban areas is a real thing. As more and more pavement hits the ground, that's less natural surfaces for your beloved snow to accumulate on. According to BBC News, pavement urban areas retain more heat than rural or even suburban areas, which in turn makes it harder for the snow to stick and pile up. Okay, finally, in conclusion, some things to remember. When verifying a forecast, it can be in one of four categories. We predict yes and it was yes, that's called a hit. We predict yes and it's a no, and that's called a false alarm. We predict no and it was a yes, that's called a miss. And we predict no and it is a no, and that's correct rejection. Fortunately, our hits are fairly good and correct rejections are also fairly good. The problem where the public gets upset is the false alarm. You said it would snow 2 feet of snow and I got 4 inches. What's wrong with you? Or the miss, you said we get 4 inches and I have 3 feet of snow on my lawn. How could you blow it this badly? Let me remind you, as I did above, that the fact that we can forecast snow at all with any degree of accuracy is nothing short of a miracle, and you should consider it as such. According to OpenLearn, some computer models are so complex that they take days or even weeks to model a single cloud. A cloud, people. They continue, that's not much use to forecasters who have to make a prediction now about tomorrow's weather for a whole city, state, or country. Also, try not to forget that the atmosphere is very chaotic and crazy and has a lot of things happening all at the same time, and we as scientists are trying to pin down how many inches of ice crystals will be piled up on your lawn compared to your neighbors 2 weeks away with superb accuracy. Did you laugh? Because you should have. Also, no snowfall forecast is truly, quote, set in stone. The model forecast is constantly updating itself with more data and initial conditions. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. This is why the professor doesn't like putting out one or two numbers to represent a whole snowstorm. I personally feel like we should move to a more vague forecast, such as low, medium, or high impact, or totals. Of course, this will be dependent on the community being forecast for, because high impact in Montana means something different in Georgia. Also, forecasting for more than 3 days out is risky business because precipitation forecast accuracy tends to decrease with an increase in forecast time. A sad truth, our technology limits us. A 10-day forecast or even a 7-day forecast with an epic snowstorm, the professor will generally laugh off. Seriously, my family knows. 3 days or less is when a forecast is at its best. Now, I coined it, but I totally found it in a Live Science article, so it's legit. Now, could this be our own fault? Urban sprawl and expanding urban areas is a real thing. As more and more pavement hits the ground, that's less natural surfaces for your beloved snow to accumulate on. According to the BBC News, pavement urban areas retain more heat than rural or even suburban areas, and that in turn makes it harder for the snow to stick and pile up. Don't forget also that snowstorm totals are one of the most sensationalized news topics, and that can lead to a crying wolf phenomenon. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this episode about why snowstorm forecast bust. Special thanks to Spectrum Local News, Hudson Valley, New York, Tree Hugger, Climate Central, OpenLearn, BBC News, Live Science, and WeatherPrediction.com. See you next time.